kind of morning that don't fade away. Like it, yeah. Let it play, share it, yeah. Pass it on your way. Stop up, don't hesitate. David L. Gray in the morning, don't be late. Welcome on in to David L. Gray in the morning. Glad to have you here. Glad to have you here for this Monday of the second week of Easter. Boy, do I have a show for you today. Make sure you stay tuned in for this one, my friends. It's going to be spicy and smoky and all the good stuff. Oh, my goodness. Donald Trump has attacked Pope Leo. And Pope Leo then responds like a gangster, like a straight G, like a straight gangster. He said, I'm not scared of you. I'm not scared. I'm like, this dude is really from Chicago. He's from the Chi. He's from the West Side or the South Side. Pope went straight gangster. You know, when Pope Leo became Pope, you know, all the people down in Louisiana was telling me, oh, you know, Pope Leo's mom is black. She's a black Creole. That's what they was telling us. We didn't see it until today. See, Pope went straight Tupac. His black side came out. I was like, oh, my goodness. Pope is a straight gangster. You know, he's not scared of Trump. So, man, I love this Pope. I really do. But did you know, let me get serious for a second, because, you know, we're going to talk about this today on the show. Yeah, Pope isn't messing around. We got some people here from Toronto. We got Anna D. My sister's here. Yeah, President doesn't understand what the Holy Father is here for. No, he doesn't even care about the smoke. Pope got his own smoke. But did you know, let me get serious, did you know that historically for the past 2,000 years, that if a leader of a state, whether it's a king or emperor, president, did you know for the past 2,000 years, whenever something like this has happened, whenever some sort of a leader of a country attacked the Holy Father, the Catholic Church, what followed was the country went into a decline. God just doesn't like this. Apparently, God doesn't like when his vicar of Christ is being attacked by a leader of a country. And all this ties into what we talked about on Monday with President Trump sending his attack dog, Pete Hegseth, to threaten the papal nuncio. This timeline is crazy. I'm about to lay it all out for you. I'm going to explain it all. I'm going to bring all the receipts like I always do. But first, let's get into the saint of the day and the readings of Mass so I can try to inspire you before I bring all the other receipts. Let's get into the saint of today. Today's saint of the day is being brought to you by St. Dominic's Media, your trusted source for everything Catholic liturgy. We have your free ebooks, your free courses, your free online retreats, free podcasts, and we have some amazing books that I'd like to introduce you to. So hop over to St. Dominic's Media. Make sure you join our mailing list so you can get our reflections on readings at Mass on Thursday or Friday before the holy day. So today's saint of the day, as you see the icon on the screen, today's saint of the day is Pope Martin, Saint Martin the First, martyr. And he was born in Todi, a small town in central Italy, not far from where so many other popes and saints were born. This is like a hotbed in Italy where the Holy Spirit is really moving some things here. So his roots were in the heart of the ancient Christian world, and his life reflects really just the toughness and the fidelity of that region, regardless of calling people out of. So he served as pope from 649 to 655. So just 6 years during one of the most turbulent and doctrinal crises in the Catholic Church. when the Byzantine Empire tried to impose the monothelite heresy, the claim that Christ only had one will. So Pope Martin refused to bend, and he convened a Lateran Council, which condemned the heresy and defended the full humanity and the full divinity without any contradiction or confusion of Jesus Christ with absolute clarity. So for that fidelity, well, you know what the emperor did. And it reminds me of the times that we're in at this very moment. For that fidelity, the emperor had kidnapped the Pope, dragged him in chains all the way to Constantinople, publicly humiliated him, and then exiled him to Crimea. And he suffered terribly, cold, hunger, chills, disease. And so he died as a martyr for the truth of Christ. So Pope St. Martin I is traditionally invoked as the patron of those who suffer for defending the faith, especially those who are persecuted under political power, as we have today. He's also the patron of courage under pressure, steadfastness in doctrine, and those facing persecution or trials. As his icon that I have on the screen here, this is the traditional iconography. In sacred art, Martin is often shown as wearing papal vestments, holding a cross or a book of doctrine, symbolizing his defense of the two wills of Christ. Now, sometimes he's depicted in chains or on a ship, recalling his forced transport into exile. He's occasionally shown as thin or gaunt, really suffering, recalling his martyrdom. So his iconography always emphasizes truth defended at great cost. So St. Martin I, he was recognized as saint in ancient tradition, just popular acclaim, long before the formal process of canonization existed. And his cult was universal by the early Middle Ages and remains as the last Pope who's venerated as a martyr. Isn't that something? So we're talking about 655. He's the last Pope that's venerated as a martyr. Like, what are these popes doing? What are popes doing, for the past, last 1400 or so years? What have popes been doing? Like, he's the last Pope that's venerated as a martyr. Like, popes got to really step up their game. All right, so let's pray for Leo. So Pope St. Martin encouraged the courageous defender of Christ's truth and faithful witness under persecution. Pray for us and pray for Pope Leo XIV as he faces today a similar persecution to yours at the hands of a powerful leader. So I'll be right back. We're going to get into today's readings of Mass, and then we'll get into what I'm about to break down for you with what's going on with President Trump persecuting Pope Leo. This is David O. Gray in the morning. Hey, before we get into today's commentary for Readings of Mass, I want to remind you about my book, The Liturgical Sense for the Readings of Mass. This is your A, but we have them for years B and for year C. If you want to learn how to live the liturgical life, that is how to live the Mass in the world, in your daily life, this is your book. Also, it unpacks scriptures in very insightful and very Catholic ways. But what I really want you to do is to make sure you go over to stdominicsmedia.com and sign up for our mailing list. Because what if you don't like to read? What if you don't like words on paper? What if you don't have time? Well, I have something for you as well. If you join a mailing list, you'll get the audio version of this book for every reading at Mass for that particular Sunday in your email box for free. So sign up for our mailing list. Again, that's at stdominicsmedia.com. Let's go ahead and get into the commentary for today's readings of Mass. Thank you. Hey, it's David O. Gray in the morning. So the readings for Mass today comes for this Monday in the second week in Easter. We got the first reading from Acts, where Peter and John, they're released from their bondage, and they go back right back out and start proclaiming Jesus Christ is risen. And then responsorial psalm from Psalm 2, It says, blessed are all who take refuge in the Lord. And then our gospel comes from John chapter 3, verses 1 through 8. And this is Jesus, his encounter with Nicodemus. And so that's what I want to talk to you about today in today's commentary on today's readings at Mass from the liturgical sense. And so, you know, this story, I think, is very, very interesting. I think there's really something fascinating about Nicodemus in today's gospel. So he comes to Jesus and says, Rabbi, we know. Rabbi, we know. So right away, Nicodemus is telling you what kind of man he is. He's a thinker. He's an observer. He's someone who pays attention to the details and to the evidence. He's not coming with emotion. He's not coming with rumor. He's coming with data. So he says, Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher who has come from God. No one can do these signs that you are doing unless God is with him. So in other words, based on the evidence, you appear to be who you say you are. That's what he's saying. Based upon evidence, you appear to be who you say you are. That's interesting. Okay. And Jesus responds also in a very profound way, I would say, because he doesn't congratulate Nicodemus for being perceptive. He doesn't say, good job, noticing the miracles, right? You know, he doesn't call him Captain Obvious. Like, oh, good job. You notice what everyone else has noticed, the things that are visible. Instead, he says, amen, amen, I say to you, unless one is born from above, he cannot see the kingdom of God. What a strange response this is to Nicodemus just saying that, okay, based upon evidence, the data, empirical information we have, you are who you say you are, right? And so Jesus could have said a number of things, right? He could say, oh, good observation. You know, you're close. No, he escalates here. This is escalation in dialogue. And so Jesus is telling him that you see me, but you do not really see me. You see the rabbi. Because this is what Nicodemus says. Rabbi. He says, you see the rabbi, you see the miracles, you see the signs, but you don't yet see who I truly am or where I truly come from. For that, right? He's calling him here. He's calling him to a higher place. He's calling him beyond just this empirical data in evidence. He's saying, for that, you need a new birth. That is a new way of seeing. So in Nicodemus, you know, true to form, he asked another evidence-based question, because this is who he is. He asked, how? So how can a man once grown old be born again? That's a process question, right? That's the type of question an engineer would ask, a mechanic would ask. Nicodemus is still thinking in terms of systems and mechanics. Okay. But here's the thing. Nicodemus never asked the most important question, the questions that gets to the bottom of everything. He never asked, why must I be reborn? And I think we tend to do the same thing, right? We ask basic questions that don't get to the bottom of anything. We ask questions like who done it? Because we always want to be Matlock. We always want to be Agatha Christie. We always want to be Sherlock Holmes. We always want to find out who the villain is, who done it. That's our tendency. And we also tend to be like Nicodemus. We tend to be concerned with systems and mechanics. How does a thing happen? Okay. I think Blessed Mother Mary does the same thing. Like, how can this be? These are the system questions. These are just basic things that really don't get to the bottom of the issue. Because again, we tend to want method. We tend to want things that don't really concern us, because the reason why we rarely ask the question why is because why forces us to confront ourselves. So if Nicodemus had asked Jesus, why do I need to be reborn? Well, Jesus would have told him plainly. He would say, because your current condition is not good enough for where you want to go. Or your current condition is not good enough where God is calling you to. Okay. So, you know, and this is something common to our lives. Have you ever been broke in your life? Like you didn't have a lot of resources, all right, and you had a broke down car. Like I've been there in college. I had some really bad cars, right? So you ever feel like, you know, you had this broke down car, but you at the same time you had to be somewhere. So you had somewhere to go, but what you had was not sufficient or was not adequate to get you to where you needed to be. That's what Jesus would have answered. And because that's the whole Easter message. Life. New life. Transformed life. Jesus, the thing you know about Jesus that we have to get over, a lot of people have to realize, is that Jesus did not come to upgrade you. He did not come to upgrade your old life. No, he came to give you something new. He came to give you a new life. And I would say you are completely, well, it comes to Catholicism, you're completely in the wrong religion if you want your old ways. You know, Catholicism is not an upgrade to anything. It's something completely new. The Liturgy of the Catholic Mass does not dismiss you into the world to go repeat your old habits. It rather, it animates you. It animates your new self to go proclaim the good news, the news that is new. Christ is risen. Yes, Christ is risen indeed. So you can't go where God is calling you with an old way of thinking. You can't walk into a new future with old habits. You cannot become a new creation while you're still clinging to your old identity. Old thinking leads to old places. Old patterns lead to old sins. Old life leads to old outcomes. Jesus is teaching the language of reinvention, the language of transformation, the language of becoming a new kind of person. Are you ready for it? Because here's a question for you. Here's what I want to ask you today. Not who, not how, but why? Why does God want to give you a new life? Because the life you have right now is too small for the future he has called you to. Why must you be born from above? Because heaven cannot be entered with a heart that has been shaped by the earth. That's not a heart that's sufficient to get into heaven. And so why does Jesus call you to change? Because the person you are today cannot carry the cross that he intends for you to carry tomorrow. So this is why the newness that Christ is offering us is new every day. Like who we are today, we can't take all of that into us with us tomorrow. There are some things that we're going to do today. They're not sufficient for the calling tomorrow. So this new birth, this new life, this being born again is a conversion process that we're being called to do constantly. So I want you to ask yourself, what old way of thinking is keeping you from a new life? What old habits are blocking you from the future that God has for you? What old identity is preventing you from seeing Christ clearly for exactly who he is and where he's from? Don't be like Nicodemus. I don't want you asking process questions. God has not called you to be a mechanic or a systems person. He's called you to conversion. And that question starts with why. Nicodemus came at night, but Jesus invited him into the light. And he's doing the same for you. This is David L. Gray in the morning. I'll be right back with our top story. Hey there, I am David L. Gray. I am a Catholic theologian getting my doctoral degree in liturgical catechesis from the Catholic University of America. And this is my morning show. Welcome in. We do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Start off with Joy in the Morning, where I give you the saint of the day and an enlightening commentary on the readings of Mass. And then we get into something interesting. I'm looking at something in faith or culture from a lens of a Catholic who believes in faith, reason, logic, and the teachings of the church. There's no deviation from the magisterium here. Why people like this channel, why people sub, why people keep coming back is because I look at things from a very critical lens. This is no emotions applied, no groupthink, no talking points to the day, none of that. Nothing can't be. I'm not saying what I'm supposed to say. I'm saying what's true. Sometimes we get in those boxes, and I think that's very dangerous when we get comfortable and we just go along with what people think and what we're supposed to believe. No, you know, if it's not dogmatic truth, then we ask the questions, why? And so that's what we're doing here. And I hope that you like it. Yeah, I may get emotional myself. I may call something stupid or retarded. I may crack some jokes. But that's, again, that's why people like this channel. That's why they sub. That's why they share. That's why they like. That's why they join a community, and I hope that you do too. Let's get back to the show. Hey, welcome back in to David L. Gray in the Morning. Shout out to the people who are tuning in for the first time. Got John here, and also saw another person, Joseph, Jude. Appreciate you guys. You know, we've been back during the morning show. We've been back posting consistently for almost 3 months now, so the channel is growing fast. A lot of people are coming in. People are sharing, subbing. I appreciate you guys. We're getting to that point now with the YouTube algorithm. You know, we're starting to consistently get out there. Our videos are consistently getting, you know, at least 1,000 views. So that's really good news. So I appreciate you guys coming in consistently. So let's keep this going for as long as we can, because I think we're doing something really cool here. So, So I'm not going to hold you today. This is not going to be, we're on time now. The first part of the show tends to take 20 minutes. So we're on time now. Okay. And I don't plan to hold you. This is not going to be a 2-hour show. I don't plan to hold you guys long today. We're going to hit this one, but I am going to cook it on medium speed. All right. Because I do want to walk through this slowly, because when you see the actual timeline, not the spin, not the comfortable blanket of cable news, you start to feel the ground shift under your feet, and you start to hear that small, cold voice that says, "We've seen this before." And every single time, the history shows this pattern. A nation doesn't have a bad year. It enters into a crisis, a real one. Let's recap what we talked about on Friday, that a lot of people over the weekend tried to push back against me because they were giving me the spin. But again, I'm going to recap the timeline and show you the truth of the matter. And then we're going to jump into the escalation point that we're going to see. We're seeing now with Trump and Pope Leo. And then I'm going to show you what this looks like historically. This is the inflection point when nations decline, when a national leader attacks the vicar of Christ. So let's walk down the timeline again. In early January of this year, 2026, something happened in Washington that no modern precedent we ever see this happening before. The Pentagon, not the State Department, the Pentagon summoned the Pope's personal ambassador. So they didn't summon the ambassador and some Brian Birch, this country's ambassador to the Vatican. They didn't summon a number of people. They didn't summon the president of the USCCB. No, they summoned the Pope's personal ambassador, the nuncio. I'm going to stop right there. I just want you to think about it because I need that to land. We're supposed to land right now. The Pentagon summoned the Pope's personal ambassador, Undersecretary of Defense Elbridge Colby. And mind you, Elbridge is not acting independent of Pete Hegseth. And Pete isn't acting independent of Trump. So Defense Undersecretary Elbridge Colby called in Cardinal Christopher Pierre. Christophe Pierre. And you don't bring in a papal diplomat to the Pentagon. Pay attention here. He goes to the Pentagon. That's where you bring generals. That's where you bring targeting officials. That's where you bring other people that's directly related to military events and actions and stages. Okay. So then that's when the leaks started. The Vatican officials used words like they gave us a bitter lecture. It was aggressive, a warning that the U.S. has military power to do whatever it wants, and the church better take its side. And then the line that froze every priest in Rome is when a U.S. official allegedly has said that the U.S. people here at the Pentagon evoked the word avion. So if you don't know church history, that sounds like a wine region. It's not. Avion is an area where the secular king held the papacy hostage, politically dominated, effectively imprisoned the Pope. That's not a metaphor. That's a historical threat. And the Vatican heard it loud and clear. Now fast forward to Holy Week. Pope Leo delivers a series of messages condemning the desire to dominate others. So he's using language that reflects the threat that was issued to him. Imperialist occupation of the world. He talked about that. And that God does not hear the prayers of those who wage war. So Pope Leo is escalating his language because actions were escalated towards the Vatican. He's firing back. As I said, Pope Leo is a G. He's a gangster. He's from Chicago. All right. So he doesn't say the United States. He doesn't have to. All right. He should have. So Barron wouldn't have been able to twist the whole thing, Bishop Barron. But he doesn't have to say because the whole world knows exactly who he's talking about. The Pope just identified a moral crisis and he pointed to the West. Now, next in the timeline, what do we see? The next shockwave hits. According to military.com, Telegraph India, Vatican officials were so alarmed by the Pentagon meeting that they canceled Pope Leo's planned visit for the 250th anniversary of the United States. Let me say that again, slowly for you. The Vatican canceled a papal visit to the United States. That just doesn't happen. That's the diplomatic equivalent to cutting the brake lines. Some insiders reportedly have said that the Pope may never visit the United States while this administration is in. Not postpone. Never. This is not a disagreement between the Trump administration and the Vatican. This is what's called a rupture. There's no relations at this point. Then in April, the story breaks open. Places like the Detroit Free Press, Yahoo, Telegraph India, even Snopes, military.com, all reporting a tense, confrontational Pentagon meeting with the Vatican's ambassador. The avion remark goes viral. People start asking, did the United States just threaten the Pope? There's no longer a rumor here. This is just an international incident at this point. And if your blood pressure is rising because, you know, we're not talking about a trade dispute, you know, your heart's not in the wrong place. Because we're talking about a nuclear armed superpower and a moral leader of 1.4 billion people in conflict. Now, that's where I left off Friday. Now, let me deal with the people who fall for the spin every single time, who believe anything that comes out of the press secretary's mouth at the White House. So, yes, we do have two accounts, and they both can't be true. So account A is based on anonymous Vatican officials reported by the Detroit Free Press by a reporter who is a managing editor of a very reputable online public magazine, rather, in Italy. He's very respected in Italy. He has his nose to the ground. People know him. People use him as a source. This isn't just some sort of Joe Schmo making up a story and posted on their WordPress account, some sort of blog, whatever. No. This is a very respected reporter in Italy who has contacts with people in the Vatican reporting this. Okay. And he says the meeting was tense. His sources tell him the meeting was tense, confrontational, and that Avion remarked, by the way, has not been retracted. The authored article has not retracted his article. Detroit Free Press has not retracted the article. So there's been no movement on it. They're sticking by their story. And by the way, the Vatican has not accused the reporter, who they know personally, as lying. Now hold that in your pocket. Not even your pocket. Hold that in your hand right now. Because now I'm going to move to account number B. Here's the spin, the account number B. Coming from, you know, Trump's buddy, Brian Birch, who started CatholicVote.com, the ambassador to the Vatican. This is coming from him now. And, you know, people who are in the spin zone. They're saying that it was a routine meeting. I'm about to blow that out the water. Give me a second. I'm about to blow that up. like we're dropping a boulder in just a small puddle of water. I'm about to blow the whole thing up. But Brian Birch and the boys in the spin room, they're saying, oh, it was just a routine meeting. That's a narrative coming from the Vatican spokesman as well. The U.S. Embassy, Brian Birch, like I said, you know, they're all saying, oh, it was a calm routine. And by the way, all the dramatic details were fabrications. Okay, so they're saying this very respected reporter from Italy is just, he's just fabricating. Like, he would just make up, like, who says Avion? Who just, that's just a weird thing just to throw in there, to fabricate a story. And to destroy and ruin your whole reputation that you've built over decades. But here is what keeps me up at night. Arnaud Pierre himself has not publicly spoken. He was in the room. He has not publicly spoken. And the Vatican press office has not, again, rebuked the reporter. Silence is not denial. Silence sometimes is the sound of someone who does not want to trigger a catastrophe. Okay. So let me ask the question no one wants to touch, so I can blow this whole narrative up real quick. What is routine about a papal nuncio, the Pope's personal ambassador, being summoned to the Pentagon? Nuncios, you know who they meet with? They don't meet with the Department of War. They don't meet with the undersecretaries of defense. They don't go to the Pentagon. That's not where nuncios go. That's not their equivalent. They meet people like Marco Rubio. They go to the State Department. They may go to the National Security Council, the White House, sometimes like Pope St. John Paul. The second, they meet with the CIA. They may meet with Congress, right? But it's always going to be kept quiet, you know, those type of things. What happens is they don't get called into the Pentagon by some sort of military strategist. Even skeptics admit maybe the tone was routine. But the venue was not. Venue matters. He was called to the Pentagon. They could have met at a Starbucks. Location matters. Setting matters. You getting called to the principal's office is different than a principal coming outside your room and calling you to the hallway. Those are two different situations. Back in my day, if you got called to the principal's office, you were going to get that paddle on your butt. If the principal said, hey, come outside for a second, David, you're just going to get talked to. Location matters. Venue matters. The venue, the timing, the host, the aftermath, none of this is routine or normal. And if you're still telling yourself that, you're not being reasonable. You're being comfortable, and comfortable is dangerous right now. The reason why the papal nuncio met with the Vatican, met with the Pentagon rather than the State Department, is we all know why. Because Pete Hegseth is Trump's attack dog. That's why. He'll do whatever Trump tells him to do. Now, Rubio, on the other hand, is not Trump's little lackey. Now, that's why Trump sends Rubio when he wants to de-escalate. He'll send Rubio to places like Panama, Venezuela, Greenland, right? He sends Pete when he wants to put someone in their place. Remember when Pete called all the generals of the whole world to a particular venue and just dressed them down? As a civilian, that's who Trump sends to dress people down and to threaten him. He's Trump's attack dog. Every president has him. You know, that's nothing new. Now, into this volatile moment, President Trump releases a blistering public rebuke of Pope Leo XIV. One of the sharpest attacks on a pope by head of a state in just modern history, in modern memory. He doubles down. Then he goes and doubled down on the tarmac. I'm going to show you both of those videos. And then the pope, I'm going to show you this video where Pope calmly responds. He responds calmly on the airplane. And so you're about to hear both of those clips. Before I play them, I need to do this preface real quick, because what you are witnessing right now, what you're about to hear, is not just some sort of political soundbite. No, it's the kind of public rupture that historians always mark as the beginning of a nation's shift in their moral trajectory. Once a country attacks a pope publicly, a line has been crossed. Let's take a look first at Trump's Truth Social post. Let me bring that up for you. So here's what he says first over on Truth Social. So he says, Pope Leo is weak on crime. Let me see if I can blow this up for you. Pope Leo is weak on crime and terrible on foreign policy. He talks about fear of the Trump administration, but he doesn't mention a fear that the Catholic Church and all other Christian organizations had during COVID when they're arresting priests, ministers, and everybody else for holding church services. Even when going outside and being 10 or even 20 feet apart, I like his brother, Louis, much better than I like him. Because Louis is all MAGA. He gets it. And Leo doesn't. I don't want a Pope who thinks it's okay for Iran to have a nuclear weapon. I don't want a Pope who thinks it's terrible that America attacked Venezuela, a country that was sending mass amount of drugs into the United States. And even worse, emptying their prisons, including murderers, drug dealers, and killers into our country. And I don't want a Pope who criticizes the President of the United States, because I'm doing exactly what I was elected in a landslide to do. Setting the record low numbers in crime and creating the greatest stock market in history. Which, you know, I mean, have you guys looked at your stock market lately? Have you looked at your TSP lately? I don't know about that one, but I digress. Leo should be thankful because, as everyone knows, he was a shocking surprise. He wasn't on any list to be Pope. And was only put there by the church because he was an American and thought that would be best way to deal with President Donald J. Trump. If I wasn't in the White House, Leo wouldn't be in the Vatican. Unfortunately, Leo's weak on crime, weak on nuclear weapons, does not sit well with me, nor does the fact that he meets with Obama sympathizers like David Axelrod, a loser from the left, who was one of those who wanted churchgoers and clerics to be arrested. Leo should get his act together as Pope, use common sense, stop catering to the radical left, and focus on being a great Pope, not a politician. It's hurting him badly. More importantly, it's hurting a Catholic Trump. It's hurting Donald J. Trump. All right. So, you know, you go down to comments. We got a lot of you know, people who are supporting President Trump attacking and verbally persecuting Pope Leo. Okay. So he said that. Now then he doubles down on the tarmac. Let me play you this video. This is stock number.
He's doing a very good job. He likes crime, I guess. He hit us. Think of it. He's worried about fear. What about the fear when the ministers and the priests and all of those great people that were arrested during COVID, and in many cases, they're outside 10 feet apart, and they were arrested. We don't like a pope that's going to say that it's okay to have a nuclear weapon. We don't want a pope that says crime is okay in our cities. I don't like it. I'm not a big fan of Pope Leo. He's a very liberal person, and he's a man that doesn't believe in stopping crime. He's a man that doesn't think that we should be toying with a country that wants a nuclear weapon so they can blow up the world. I'm not a fan of Pope Leo.
All right, so you saw that, you heard that. And after hearing that clip, I think we need to pause and remember something that I said the other day about morality. And so the dark world is, as always, and will always be bent on death. Death is a sacrament. No matter how you can achieve it, whether it's just straight up murder, whether it's sanctioned murder, you know, death penalty, abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, war, whatever. If you can kill somebody in a dark world, it's a virtue, it's a sacrament, because killing, murder is their version of fixing the problem. If you can just kill it, you fix the problem. That's their mentality. It's all bent on death. Death is always normalized in a dark world. That's his nature, right? His fallen nature. That's his fallen logic. It's the logos without the logos. It's a sacrament for them. So when the Catholic Church steps into the world and proclaims the gospel of life, the reaction is always the same. In every age, in every empire, in every political system, the reaction is persecution, attack, humiliation, distortion, and accusation. And that's what you saw with Trump. Because when death is treated as a virtue, it becomes a threat. When domination is celebrated as strength, Jesus teaches, you know, mercy, blessed are the peacemakers, it looks like weakness. It does. When violence is framed as justice, peace becomes a little bit suspicious. Like, what are they really up to? What are they really up to promoting this peace thing? And when culture worships power, the cross becomes intolerable. This is not new. This is exactly what Jesus faced. You know, he remember when Jesus healed the sick? And then the Jews said he was dangerous. What's that? Remember he raised people from the dead, like Lazarus? And then they plotted to kill him? Wait, he raised somebody from the dead. Let's kill him. He preached life and the world answered with death. That's the best the world can do. Again, if the world can kill someone, they've solved a problem. So when a church today says what Christ said, when the Pope says that human life is sacred, that war is not God's will, that domination is not a virtue, the dark world responds exactly as it did with Christ. Accusation. You're weak. You're political. You're siding with the wrong people. You're naive. You're dangerous. This is the script. This is the reflex of the world that has made peace with death and the diabolical. And here's the truth. When death becomes a sacrament, there's really no reasoning with it. It's not, you can't even really do anything with this. Once a person has crossed that mind, that place mentally where death has become a sacrament, where they can normalize murdering the Imago Dei, once you can rationalize, and I'm not talking about self-defense. Self-defense is you protecting your own life, and by doing that, someone else dies. Nobody's talking about self-defense. All right? What I'm talking about is murder. Once a person has reason in their mind that, oh, this is normal behavior. I can kill a baby in the womb. That's normal. You can't negotiate with that. you can't do anything worth that worldview that sees human life as just something expendable. You can't persuade a culture that treats killing as policy. You can't argue with a system that believes that power is the highest good. When a church says life is sacred, the world hears, you are wrong, and reacts in a way, the only way that it knows how to do, with hostility, with violence. This is why saints were martyred. This is why people like what we talked about at the beginning of the show, Saint Pope Martin I. This is why he was martyred. This is why all the saints are martyred. Why prophets were stoned. Why Christ was crucified. You can't reason with these people. And this is why in every age, when a church stands up and proclaims the gospel of life, the world that worships death responds with fury. So when you hear accusations against Pope Leo, that he wants crime, that he wants chaos, that he wants dangerous nations and power of nuclear weapons, understand what's really happening. This is not about crime. This is not about geopolitics. This is not about nuclear weapons. This is about the gospel of life colliding with the culture of death. And whenever that collision happens, sparks fly. Every time the church has stood against the culture of death, the world has responded the same way, with hostility towards the messenger. Same script, different time. Insert President Trump, Pope Leo. Now let's hear from Pope Leo, see how he responds to these threats from the President of the United States. I got two clips. Here's the first one. Here's stock number two.
Thank you. You said that you said about foreign policy, you have fear of the Trump administration. I have no fear of the Trump administration, nor speaking out loudly about the message of the gospel. And that's what I believe. I am called to know what the church is called to. We're not politicians. We're not looking to make foreign policies and policy with the same perspective that we might understand it. But I do believe that the message of the gospel, blessed are the peacemakers, is the message of the world needs to know.
Thank you very much for clarifying that.
Yeah, sorry for the sound of the audio. I tried to clean it up a little bit. It was really noisy when I got it off online because the airplane was going. But what he was saying is that I'm not scared of President Trump. He says, I'm not a politician. I'm just here to preach the gospel of life. So he responds like a like an American from Chicago. Like, I'm not scared of this dude over here. Right. Now, let me play stock number 3 for you. Has a little bit better audio.
Of the Trump administration.
I do not look at my role as being a political politician. I don't want to get into a debate with him. I don't think that the message of the gospel is meant to be abused in the way that some people are doing. And I will continue to speak out loudly against war, looking to promote peace, promoting dialogue and multilateral relationships among the states, and look for just solutions to problems. Too many people are suffering in the world today. Too many innocent people are being killed. And I think someone has to stand up.
I just think we're used to people capitulating and finding compromise with evil. I think we're just used to people just, you're born into a situation. You ever been in a job and you've been in a job like a long time and you don't notice things are broken. And then someone new comes in to the place you've been for 20 years and they start asking questions like, why? Why are you doing it this way? Because they're coming from a different mindset, from different experiences. And they're like, well, you know, this could be a they see things from a completely new way. So the problem is in society, we've just gotten used to evil. We've gotten used to the sacrament of death. And we just accept things are as they are. Like, you just have to go to war sometimes, right? And that's because we don't believe in that Jesus is the King of Peace. We don't believe in the power of love. By the point of time, we have to go drop some drones on some kids and some military leaders and assassinate some people. By the time we got to that point, that's way over here, we've failed to love way over here. Like, there are so many things we can prevent if we just evangelize the gospel of Jesus Christ way over here. But because we don't do the basic work here, like, evil fills in that vacuum. This is what happens. And we've just gotten used to that. But now we have a Pope that's standing like 10 toes down, that's not compromising on life. This just sounds weird. And we just can't accept it. That he won't move, that he's unshakable, that he's not compromising. But as I said before, there's no compromising. Once you believe the truth, once you believe in Jesus Christ, who he is, once you believe in a sacrament, sacraments are all about life. Jesus' message is all about life. Once you truly believe that, there's no compromise with people who believe in the diabolical, that just believe death is a solution to everything. So that's what the problem is. But let's get into the historic thing, okay? Because this is not the first time that a nation under strain has turned on the papacy. Watch what happens next. There's a guy named Napoleon. His opposition, the pope that he attacked, was named Pius VII. Napoleon called Pius VII a meddlesome priest, and then he kidnapped him, held him prisoner, and tried to break the church. Within a few years, you know what happened? Napoleon's empire collapsed. There was a guy whose name was Bismarck, right? Like the pastry. His opposition was Pius IX. Bismarck launched what was called the Kulturkampf, which means a culture war in German. So he jailed priests, he expelled religious leaders. And within a decade, you know what happened? He had to reverse everything. Mussolini was another guy, Italian. His opposition was Pius XI. Mussolini attacked the Vatican as an enemy of the state. And within years, what happened? His regime spiraled into war and ruin. Castro versus Pope John Paul II. Castro denounced the Pope as an imperialist tool. What happens within a generation after that? Cuba's system collapsed. We could bring up Henry VIII, the guy who I like to say just wanted to get laid like every Protestant. When a Protestant wants to get laid, they'll find any justification to do so. Same with Henry. His opposition was Clement VII. Henry breaks from Rome, seizes church property, persecutes, kills, murders priests, exiles them. What happens after that? Well, England enters into a century of religious turmoil and bloodshed. There's a pattern that happens when you start persecuting the Pope as a nation. And that's where America has went to now. As a nation, through our president, we have become anti-Catholic, anti-Christ, and we have attacked a pope through our president, elected. That's where we're at now. And there's a consequence to this type of thing. Every single one of these confrontations, did not emerge during, I would call, a national time of strength. Never. They always emerge during national instability. And that's what we're in now. Whether we want to admit it or not, that's what it is. So Trump feels his power slipping. For mathematical reasons, he just has, and after the midterms, he's a sitting duck. He's not running for re-election. So mathematically, he feels his power slipping, but also he sees a lot of people are circling. He sees the online sphere of these talking heads, you know, people like Tucker, Rogan, Candace, a lot of the big names. They're all smelling blood. You have idiots, racist idiots like Nick Fuentes, who's influential for some reason. He has a big following. So all these online talking heads who are influential have cult followings. Who could even make it so that if Trump was going to run for re-election, they would make sure that he's not re-elected. And I think they're that influential, perhaps. So he recognizes that they smell blood. So we have national instability. We have a leader whose power is slipping. And whenever that happens, it happens historically, whether it's Napoleon, Bismarck, Mussolini, Castro, Henry VIII. When leaders feel their power slipping, they lash out to the one institution they cannot control. So look where we stand today. A papal ambassador summoned to the Pentagon. A papal visit canceled, dueling narratives, diplomatic silence, a sitting U.S. president publicly attacking a pope. You're not watching normal political disagreement here. You're watching a nation hit an inflection point. You're watching a moment where historians call the beginning. Right? So historians look back and say, oh, you know, when was the beginning of the fall? Right. This is the point. This is the inflection point. This is the beginning. You are watching a sign, not of strength, but of strain. And if that doesn't raise your blood pressure, you haven't been paying attention. But the most important question, I would say, is why? Right? That's how we started off this show with Nicodemus. Then he asked the most important question, at least in the record that we have. He doesn't ask why. Why always gets to the bottom of everything. And there was a guy whose car kept getting stolen. And he kept asking everyone in the neighborhood and going to police, like, who did it? Who stole my car? Who stole my car? Who stole my car? Every time, this would happen like at least once every 3 weeks, his car would get stolen. And he kept asking the same question, who stole my car? Turns out he never asked the question why. The question was because he keeps leaving his keys in the car. So the question remains here as we finish up this monologue. Why is President Trump attacking the Pope? Yes, he's losing power. It's a nation under strain. But there's a deeper, something deeper here. There's a deeper answer to why. And I think Professor E. Michael Jones, I think he answered the question when he is on my show a few weeks ago. This is what Dr. E. Michael Jones has to say about why President Trump is attacking Pope Leo. And here's his answer. Seems to look like every other politician who's owned by someone, either corporate interests or by, you know, the Jewish, you know, political establishment. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree. I think there's an added development here, too. And I think something's gone wrong with his mind. I think he's a man who's suffering from dementia. His parents both had dementia. I went out on a limb and I said, I think he's suffering from tertiary syphilis. Why do I say tertiary syphilis? Because when the syphilis, so you know what syphilis is, a venereal disease. Now, if there's anyone who could come by it honestly, it was Donald Trump. He was not a model of chastity. Bill Gates contracted a venereal disease with his buddy Epstein after screwing some Russian teenagers. So it's not possible. I checked with Grok, which is the ultimate authority on everything right now, and Grok said, yes, even in the age of penicillin, it's possible to contract syphilis. It then goes into remission. You think it's over, and then it comes back when it goes to your brain. What are the symptoms of tertiary syphilis? Grandiosity. Grandiosity.
Okay, check, check.
Now, what do I mean, grandiosity? How about invading Venezuela, annexing Greenland, and then going into Iran without a plan of what to do? Okay, because I am the great Donald Trump. This is other.
Okay, I got it. I give you that one. I give you grandiosity. What else do you have?
Paranoia.
Okay, check. Check.
Pressure of speech. Pressure of speech means you just run on. You just run. You keep talking and talking and talking.
Check.
Okay.
Check.
There's an article. I'm putting the article together in. It's going to be in the next issue of Culture Wars magazine. Because I think that but I'm saying, wait a minute. This is not the primary category. What is the primary category? It's dementia. What is the relationship between dementia and sin? This is something that's worth exploring.
Yeah, I mean, there you heard it from the great one himself, Dr. E. Michael Jones. The reason why President Trump is attacking Pope Leo is because Trump has an STD. There you have it. He has an STD. Maybe Occam's razor, which tells us is a tool that says that the simplest answer is probably the right one. It's nothing really that complex. What's the simplest answer here? Trump has an STD. And it causes him to attack the vicar of Christ. It doesn't make him less culpable or anything like that. No, he's doing with full knowledge. It's free will. He may not know this, you know. This is grave matter. But he does it because he has an STD. Right? I think Marmara says something here. Marmara says, even Melania gave a national statement bringing up Epstein after Trump told us to forget about Epstein. Like, why does she do that? Syphilis, the tertiary kind. And this is where everything we've talked about today comes to a head. Because moments like this really force us Catholics to ask The question that I don't think can be avoided anymore. Am I a Catholic first? Or am I something else first? Right. Am I a Catholic first or I'm American first? Am I MAGA or am I Catholic first? And I asked this question to someone who voted twice for Trump. But again, this is just one of those points where we just have to say, like, the line has been crossed, hasn't it? Like, are you still friends with someone after you see them punch your mom in the face? Can we still be friends after that? Maybe after I stomp your head into the ground, maybe we can get back. But, you know, there's just a price to pay for what you just did. Who are we as Catholics? Are we Catholics first? So, and this is not about parties. It's not about personalities. It's not about movements. This is just about identity. When a church is proclaiming the gospel of life and the world responds with hostility, accusations, distortion, and even Catholics, every Catholic has to decide, where do they stand? And even people like Brian Birch, and I think one of you guys in the comments, you mentioned Cardinal Burke, everyone in the spin zone are talking about, oh, that meeting was not really what a respected reporter says it was through his sources inside the Vatican. No, it's actually something else. But see, when it keeps continuing, when it keeps going on, at some point in time, you have to say, stop. Like Erica Kirk talking to Candace Owens, just stop. I mean, if you don't stop, there's just going to be consequences for the United States. And the consequences are what they've always been. This is the point where America goes into decline when you attack a pope. When a pope is attacked for just defending human life and dignity, when a church is mocked for preaching peace, just saying Jesus is the king of peace, blessed are the peacemakers, but the church is persecuted for preaching the gospel, if we're being persecuted for what Jesus said, what's next? When a successor of Peter is treated as an obstacle to power, when the moment, I think that's the moment where the mask just comes off, right? And really we start to see there's just a deeper spiritual battle taking place. When we see the diabolic becoming visible here in this nation, you can't be a nation who attacks Christ and his church and think you're just going to get away with that. But I think it's in that moment that every Catholic has to look in the mirror and says, do I belong to Christ or do I belong to a political party? Who do I belong to? Because the dark world will always demand your allegiance. That's just how it is. Even if you go on USA Jobs now and you're looking for jobs or something like that to work for the government, you have to answer 4 questions about how loyal are you to the United States. And you even have to give examples in the first question. You have to demonstrate your loyalty. So when you have a country that's attacking Catholics and Christ and his church and the Pope, what test of allegiance is coming next with the political parties? Can you be a Republican and a Catholic? That's a fair question. We don't know. Can you be MAGA and Catholic? It doesn't seem like the case. Because the dark world will always try to pull you into its orbit. It will always try to convince you that your loyalty belongs to the movement, the leader, the ideology, the national flag. But Christ, what does Christ say? Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these other things will be added unto you. The church says you are citizens of the kingdom of heaven. That's where you're a citizen of. And history shows you that when nations enter into decline, they demand from their people a kind of loyalty that belongs only to God every single time. When a nation goes into decline, they demand purity tests to prove your loyalty. So this is a crucial moment. Not just politically, but spiritually. It's a moment of clarity, a moment of testing, a moment when Catholics must decide whether they stand with the gospel life or be swept into the culture of death. There's just a higher standard that Jesus set. And we just had to figure out, do we truly want that standard? Do we want to do what love demands all the way here so that the dark world doesn't get into the position where they feel like they have to kill somebody? Right? Do we want to love all the way back here as we are and preach the gospel and leave the mass as apostles and do the hard work that we have to do? That's a choice that we have. So whether there will be disciples first or parsons first, you know, you have to decide, you know, who are you? What's your identity as a Catholic? Whether they will follow Christ or follow the crowd. And that's the question that it's a choice. It's your choice. You get to decide who you are in Christ. And that's the question that's before you right now. Because when a pope is attacked, neutrality is no longer an option. It's not. Stop fooling yourself. Don't lie to yourself. Neutrality is off the table. And silence becomes a choice. And every Catholic must decide which kingdom they belong to. The other alternative, I'll just put it out there for you. The other alternative is that you go ahead and you accept the fact that America has a new religion that is hostile to Christ and his church. And the head of that new state church of America, America's new state church, is a man who, yeah, he depicts himself as Christ. That's your new religion. That's your new savior. That's your new demigod. He depicts himself as Christ. He's the healer. He's the savior. He's the one that's coming to the world. That's your option. It's Christ or it's the Antichrist. You decide. It's up to you. This has been David L. Gray in the morning. Let me get to your comments and then we'll get out of here. I told you guys I'm not going to hold you too long. It's sounded like just a little bit over an hour, which is good for me. All right. Let me get to your comments. My man Jon Snow, which is a great handle, by the way, for us Game of Thrones fans. Black tie on black vest is excellent. I appreciate that. It took me a while to get here. I kept switching the fits today. I didn't like how it's working out, but I appreciate you saying that. Defender of faith. The difference is not a secular administration or nation as a Protestant nation and an evangelical administration that do not respect the papacy or Catholicism in general. Hey, here's John. Yeah, John is the one to say Cardinal Burke is arguing that the narrative of an ongoing clash is exaggerated. I don't think that's a position you can continue to hold after what Trump just said on Truth Social and on the tarmac. How long do you want to try to hold that position? I think you're making yourself look foolish at this point. John said the nuns with the paddles had a few of those private meetings. Yeah, those private meetings. With the principals, or you say the nuns, yeah, those. I mean, you knew what was coming next, right? Yeah, I don't remember Trump labeling the Pope as low IQ. I did hear something yesterday, or was that someone just? Yeah, I think that was like an inference, or somebody just throwing a gloss on there, because the Pope is wrong. And somebody's pointing out how the Pope has like all these degrees or something like that. It's kind of hard to call Leo someone with low IQ. Brianna says, well, to be fair, he isn't a fan of anyone who disagrees with how he goes about doing things. I wish he had just sit with his anger and disappointment rather than pipe up stuff, but that isn't who he is, right? Yeah, that's a great point. That's a brilliant point that my sister raises, because, like, we talked about this Monday, like we were talking about in context of God. Like, if you feel distant from God, that's you. God didn't move. Or if you feel closer to God, that's not God either. God didn't move in that instance. You just drew closer to him. I think also brought it up with Bishop Robert Barron last week. People, everyone is mad with Barron. Left, right, center, right, left of center. Everyone's mad at Barron for completely different reasons, but Barron hasn't changed. He's been the same person he was for the last 30 years. He's always been a centrist. They just decided that's his turn. And I would say, yeah, I would say Brianna is absolutely spot on here. This is Trump true to form. The way he's popping off on Pope Leo is the same way he popped off on Rosie O'Donnell. This is just the modus operandi, right? But I'd also add to that, just the lack of self-awareness is concerning. Yeah, I think when you're like an old person, hopefully I'm not like this, and I'm sure I will be. I think that sometimes you get old and you just give zero ducks. You don't care what you say. You don't care who throws it and who catches it. You just throw it. Like, who catches it? Who catches it? And you just don't care what you say anymore. It could be the tertiary syphilis. Who knows? But the fact of the matter is that Brianna's right. This is just his modus operandi. And I would just respond and say the lack of self-awareness would hopefully show you, no matter how old you get, that there's certain lines that you should not cross. You ever been in a relationship with someone and they don't know the lines, not the cross? When you're like in a relationship with a person, you're in a fight with a person you're in a relationship with. And fine, those arguments and disagreements are going to happen, but there's a contract that you and I have signed not to cross certain lines. So there's certain things you can't say about my mother. There's certain things I won't say about your parents. You know, there's just certain lines spouses just don't cross. Okay. And this is just one of those things. I think Trump just doesn't have self-awareness that this was a line. I think there's just consequences to this line. So, but yeah, I think that's a great comment though. Brianna says, I don't think the Holy Father has any reason to be racist. Yeah. I don't know who Leo has always been. Like, he's new to me. So, but if this is who he is, he's just always standing 10 toes down for what he believes in, and what he believes in is the gospel. Like, that's my dude. That's the homie. I'll rock with him until the end. As long as he doesn't get, now I think some of his appointments that he's made as bishop are kind of weird. You know, some of the things who the press, his Vatican press office says he met with this person, Axelrod, James Martin, you know, I don't know all who he's meeting with, but at least the press office wants to throw those things out there. I think that's weird. But if he's standing 10 toes down for the gospel, and not deviating from the gospel, and he wants to talk about Jesus, that's the homie. I'll rock with him. John says Trump is becoming Herod, worried about losing his power. Yeah, that's a good one right there. John says, does anyone think Trump didn't see Leo Bliss block of ice? Again. You know, I haven't really put that much thought into that. So I'm not going to express anything here because I haven't really thought about it. Just maybe some things I want to say about, you know, papal blessings, you know, priestly blessings of the earth and things like that. I'll just leave it there because I'm going to say something ridiculous. I think we already got that one. Defender faces isn't a simple answer that he's full of pride and kind of like an a-hole. That could be true too. That could be Occam Razors. The Occam Razor, right? So Brandon is saying that is who he's always been. And so you would add on to that saying he's always been an a-hole. Okay. Yeah. You know. That can happen. You know, you're just born into a certain situation. You never suffer personally in your life, and you just always just a jerk. Yeah, that's possible. I'll go with that. Okay, maybe I confuse his Pope evaluation with his Candace and Tucker evaluation. Yeah, that may be it. Candace was talking about something. Is that where I heard that from, Candace? Because Trump said something about somebody, and Candace said, oh, yeah, that was the opposite. I think that's what it was. Yeah, it was something like that. Because Candace was talking about how, yeah, because I think he called Tucker a college dropout. And then Candace Owens responded saying, well, your whole base has high school diplomas, the military high school diplomas. Republicans, the demographic, have less college degrees than Democrats and stuff like that. So, yeah, maybe it was that. And when Candace Owens asked quite Trump the other day, I think it was Friday in that video, asked him if he was gay because he called Brigitte Macron attractive, I died. I didn't watch it until last night. And as soon as she said that, like, are you gay? I went to bed. Sometimes the internet just needs to I wish we had like a switch. Like we could just turn off the internet for like 24 hours, maybe 72 hours. Sometimes the internet just gets crazy. And we all just need to calm down. It'd take 3 days off the internet. Like if I was president, I would turn off the internet for 3 days, like every other week. Like it's crazy out here. People are just saying whatever. It's a crazy time we live in. I can't believe it. Brianna says, that's the best part of old people. That's why I like my golf ladies. They've been there, done that, just have fun. It's the old people say whatever they want to say, don't they? Judy Kenson, that's entertainment. Yeah. And Marmar said, I love my 2-year contract at the nurse home. It really opened my eyes to the psychology of the elderly. Yeah, that's wild. And John says, I reread a chapter of Americanism and Handbook of Heresies, 1928. Been seeing a lot of Americanism on X. I agree with getting off the internet for several days. Yeah. Awesome. Hey, this was a really good show, man. I really appreciate you guys coming in, the dialogue. I don't know if you agree, but I thought that was really like a really good monologue. I think I really put it together well today. I think I communicated it very well. So yeah, you know what? I'm just gonna use Father Goring. I mean,
this is a masterpiece.
Yeah, I think my monologue was on point today. I think it was.
This is a masterpiece.
Go ahead and share this one. I don't mind if you share this one because I think I did a really good job. I think the lighting is good. I didn't have any technical glitches. I think your comments were spot on. We didn't have any trolls in here. The pulling in video, leaving video. I think everything was, it was just a good show. Just thanks be to God. You know, I pray over all my shows. First thing when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, God bless this show. If there's anything that you want me to say that I'm not supposed to say, take it out of my mouth. Is there anything that you want me to say? Help me craft it in my monologue. And I just... I think God was really, he's really been blessing, like, you know, my work and, you know, the show. And I really appreciate it. So, you know what? Thank you.
This is a masterpiece.
Thank you, Father Mark Goring, for saying that. I really appreciate you. And Brianna, it's just such a great show, David. David, God bless you, brother. I miss you guys. We miss you too. We'll see if we come back to the DC area, if you're still there when we get there, sis. All right. But until then, and until the Wednesday, blessings to Shalom to you and to yours. This has been David O'Gray in the morning.
Hey yo, wake up. Yeah. New day, new mercy, fresh light on the way. Coffee in the cup, let the silence pray. Word for your walk, truth for your mind. We read the signs, but we don't lose time. Culture talk, scripture sharp. Faith with rhythm, intellect with heart. No panic, no noise, just wisdom and grace. Morning hits different when you start in this place. Wake up, yeah. Tap in right now, let the truth hit soft. Let it hit profound. Wake up, don't scroll past prayer. It's David L. Gray in the morning. Meet me there. Breathe deep, set your pace. Faith ain't heavy when it's put in place. Start with God, then face the day. That's the kind of morning that don't fade away. Like it, yeah, let it play. Share it, yeah, pass it on your way. Sub up, don't hesitate. David L. Gray in the morning, don't be late. Thank you.